it's okay to not charge very much at the beginning and get your legs under you and figure out like who are the people I'm really here to serve and I can have the most impact with. But you have to be upping your price every 3 to 7 clients as a coach. With you guys, I think it's probably every single client, because if you're doing 10 hours a week, you don't have that much time to give away, right?
This episode is sponsored by the Unicorn Digital Marketing Assistant School's Self-Starter Program. It's perfect for freelancers who are ready to ditch low-paying VA work and step into high-value digital marketing roles. Learn at your own pace, master in-demand marketing skills, and build a business you love that pays well and gives you flexibility. Get started now at udmaschool.com. Hey there, I'm Emily Reagan, and you found the Marketing Freelancer. This is the podcast for marketing freelancers and service providers who are already making an impact behind the scenes and want to take their skills, income, and business to the next level. Here, we're all about embracing the unicorn title, a full-stack marketer who can do it all: strategy, implementation, creativity, and everything in between. We're the magic makers who know how to deliver real results for clients and are ready to rise as sought-after marketing specialists. We're building a business we're proud of, working with dream clients with impact, and charging rates that reflect our work's worth. Unicorns unite. My guest today is a business coach with 15 years experience and host of the Coach Business Podcast, Karen Gillen. Now, she's done a values workshop over inside our Digital Marketers Workgroup, a private training so we can figure out what our values are and how to align with clients who also share the same values. Because if the values don't match, it's not going to be a good fit. But today on the show, we're going to have a deeper conversation about how to stop thinking like an employee and start leading like the business owner, and why we need to set higher standards, what's actually going on inside behind the curtain of other businesses, and why it is so important that we rally together as the podcast was originally called, A Unicorns Unite, and raise the expectations and what we put out there into the world so that we can link arms, charge more, get the credit we deserve, and be treated like business owners. So it's like a rallying cry episode here. It's a very good conversation. Listen up if you're already juggling multiple clients, if you are an accidental freelancer like I was for so long, or even if you're in the corporate space and you're getting ready to start freelancing. This conversation will challenge you, motivate you, and most importantly, remind you that you are the magic behind the scenes. Let's jump in. I am so excited to have my friend Karen Gillen here to share her wisdom in all of her years coaching and talk about how we can step into our power as the magic maker behind the scenes. And I am thrilled to have you here. You just taught a values workshop over in my work group, which was phenomenal. It helps unicorns go into their client work, making decisions on who they work with and what they do. So before we get started, Karen, tell everyone hello and a little bit about you, your backstory, your origin story into business.
Hi, I'm Karen. And I've been supporting business owners for, I think I figured out, like 38 years. If you count the dinner table where I grew up in a family of small business owners.
Oh,
yeah.
Tell me more.
My parents owned a marine business. My grandma had real estate, a store, and a tourism business. My grandfather started a mall in Juneau and had a department store that is now still running. My uncle runs it. My brother now runs my parents' business. There were businesses everywhere.
For me, I didn't have entrepreneurs in my family at all. So did you know at an early age, this is something you were interested in, or was it the only way? How did that affect you?
I think I grew up just thinking like, what will the business be? It wouldn't be like anything other than that, right?
Yeah.
So my question was different. It's like, how am I going to show up in my way with a business versus what job will I go and have?
Did you feel different than your peers, like who are graduating high school and looking at college and thinking about becoming employees?
I definitely was very aware of the employee mindset before I graduated from high school. I remember thinking about my parents' employees and hearing about what they were doing or talking about, and then also how they showed up in the community. And I was like, they're not thinking like an owner. They don't get it. Like, and if you see the behind the scenes of what it's like to have ownership, to provide insurance, to be the person who everyone in town calls on Sunday at 7 a.m. on your home line when your shit breaks. Like, people don't get it. And I think that most of us as owners, like, this is something I do with a lot of the coaches I work with, like, we have to do the work of stepping into ownership and really getting it for ourselves, because no one's going to do it for you and no one's going to get it. So you have to get it yourself so that you can have the benefits of it and understand yourself and what you're like up against and dealing with every day.
I think service providers, we're in such a weird place because mm-hmm. we are self-employed business owners. Mm-hmm. Don't all have teams. We don't all have subcontractors. Most of us are solo, but we're mm-hmm. also in this funny little place of working with the client who sometimes treat us like employees.
Right.
Oh, you know, like, it's real sticky there. Like, remembering.
I have the goosebumps. This is so important.
It is. It's like, yeah. it's so hard. And you can get the cliche advice like, oh, schedule your CEO day. But mm-hmm. I think most people listening who are freelancers don't always look at themselves or feel like in control business owners. So
right.
before we get into this, tell everyone what your business looks like right now and what you do.
I am a coach for coaches, and I do business strategy, sales, kind of all the stuff, because I work with a lot of coaches who are newer in business or under the 250K a year mark. So it's all that kind of growth and development, becoming owners, becoming business owners, defining who are we in business? How do we want to show up? What are the kinds of offers that fit us really well? And then letting ourselves have that and making sure we aren't creating businesses that are just as shitty as the jobs we left.
I think everyone listening is like, amen. What the heck did I do? Now I'm juggling 85 million clients and working 24/7. And it seems easier like to go back and be an employee sometimes.
Yeah. One of the things that I think about a lot is like, I had a leadership role in the last job I had where I was in charge of a lot of people. And I saw, here is their loaded hourly rate. So like, take whatever you think you're getting paid and add 50 to 100% onto that. And that's what your business, that's what you cost the company to work for them, because they're paying for the building, the phone line, your cell phone, the internet for everybody, your insurance, whatever all of the benefits are, the company party, all of that stuff is paid for by the business owner, by the business. And it has to be. Like, that's the health of a business depends on it. So when you are running your own company, and one of the greatest mindset shifts you need to make is that extra 50 to 100%, I actually have to charge that. So I can't go from making $27.50 an hour and then go charge $27.50 an hour. I need to charge probably at least $50 if I want to have any chance of having a similar experience.
Yeah. Otherwise, you get stuck in the commodity world and the rat race over here. We all know, though, especially in this online space, not everyone's willing to pay that or has a budget for that. And I think that's where a lot of our resentment and our burnout comes, is like, oh, we see a really good job opportunity posted in the work group, and then they're asking for everything, the sun and the moon and video editing. And they want $20
an hour. They want you to be a Facebook ads expert as well.
Oh God, that's the one that gets me really lit up. I think I even did a reel about it, asking you to do your ads. Ugh.
Yeah, it's not fair.
No, it's not.
I'm guessing a lot of the people that you work with are parents. Is that right?
Yeah, we have a contingency who are not, but I think a lot of them are like me. Not everyone's even a military spouse, but a lot of us have had previous work experience, left corporate, had a break, we transitioned. We have some people who retired and want freelance mm-hmm. work that is scaled down from what they used to do.
Love it. Yeah. I think about the work that you and your unicorns do very similarly to like someone who takes care of my kid. You know, that feeling of like trying to get your summer camps lined out or finding the perfect nanny situation and the risk that we all have of it falling through. Like, you are all in that same position of having so much power to make or break your client's peace of mind and profitability and their life, right? You're the one with the power.
Yeah. And I hear these people are our peers, right? Our friends, other business owners constantly complaining about their team. And it's because they're scared. They know that they cannot do that business without help, and they're frustrated. And they see their like balls being dropped. They don't hear from their teammates for a little bit, but there's also a lot of good in there too. I hate to sound just negative, but like I see the fear a lot and it's mm-hmm. that panic because it is their baby. It's their baby.
Right, right. And you guys are like the people who support all of our babies, kids or businesses. Like you guys have tons of power. And I think the thing that I want everyone to get is like, we're willing to pay for what we love and we're willing to pay for what we value. Like a lot of people don't know how to value you and what you do, but those of us who do are willing to pay for it. And for the peace of mind of not having to like patchwork together 17 different people to do whatever in every different country, just so I can save $17 a month.
Oh yeah, that was very relatable right there. Well, and that's also why I'm like, hey, we are unicorns. Like we need to know what makes us different, what makes us unique, like why people want us in their business. And somebody was kind of making fun of me in the online space thinking like a unicorn does everything. And that wasn't the purpose at all. Like that's impossible. And having a VA come in or, you know, marketing assistant or specialist come in and save and run your business and you keep all the profits is insane in general. Mm-hmm. But the true essence of a unicorn is being able to combine your talent, your passion, being mission driven, like being able to help the world with your talents and align with a client who also values that and needs that. And it could be like the topic in the industry is something you're passionate about. It could just be that the client's business is too. Like sometimes it's like a perfect match. Like I have a background in art history and you have an art history course and I get to go change the world through art history without being the face of my business. Like that's what I mean. And unicorns do not just do everything.
Imagine a unicorn doing everything. I think of them as being like these sparkly creatures who do what they want. Right? Like if I'm a unicorn, I'm doing what I want and you're all impressed with me just because I exist.
And that was kind of like what I meant. And through this podcast, actually one of my work group members, like, did you know unicorn marketer is a thing? It's a full stack marketer. And Karin, I had no idea. I just knew I was the rare unicorn out in the field with my cute little sparkles and I think I have wings and maybe rainbows. And I knew every single client wanted me. And I knew that because I had a skill set that the other VAs didn't have. And I did it well. And it was kind of this like powerful oozing confidence type of situation. And that's what I wanted everyone to step in for what that is for them. Because not anyone is the same as me. Like, I think that's right. Where I struggle too. I'm not going to have like an army of mini Emilys because we're all coming to the table with different skills, right?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's where like good boundaries and good pricing make you find the people who realize that you're the unicorn for me. If you're going to charge me like good prices that really make your life work, I'm only going to pay you if you are the right unicorn. And the experience that you get to have of being the right unicorn for me is worth, like there's a huge value in that. Mm-hmm. The work feels easier, right? But if it's just like, oh, I'm cheap, so anyone will hire me, that's not very satisfying for you. And it's probably not very impactful for your people. So you never get to that fulfilled side of it that you really want to experience, I'm imagining.
So I think about the people at the beginning who, you know, maybe they just started their freelance business, so they don't have all of the social proof, all the reputation, all of the network. And I'm curious too, because you are a business owner and you've worked with contractors and other coaches who have contractors too. So I know you hear a lot of things too. How do you bridge that gap from the I'm new $25 an hour to getting to the like, all right, that, what did you call that rate?
The loaded hourly rate.
Yeah,
to the loaded. That pays your taxes and buys you a new computer every year and whatever it is.
I'll call it the minimal acceptable rate. That's why it was throwing me up when you added.
Well, what is that rate? What is the rate? I think if we just drew a line in the sand and said there is no freelancer who should ever do anything for less than this per hour, what would that rate be?
I mean, is this a rhetorical question you want me to answer?
I want you to answer it. Yeah, I think we should know the answer.
Well, I think when you add on the 15% self-employment tax alone, I would never do anything for less than, I mean, I would like to say 50, but I wouldn't do any of this work for less than 35. I wouldn't even pay attention.
Great. My mind was saying 45. So great. Yeah. I think we are all doing a disservice to you guys for hiring you for less than that. And you're doing yourselves all a disservice for charging less than that. And I get that that's prickly and confrontational, but the fact is you're all owners. And if you don't all decide to set a minimum for yourselves.
Yep.
We want the cheaper jeans at Target if they're exactly the same as the ones I could get at Nordstrom.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you were all, what if we all raised the bar and said, I'm actually not willing to stand with poverty standards for business owners anymore? I don't think that's okay.
Why do you think I call this podcast Unicorns Unite? Like, I had the same thought. Like, if we all collectively got in together, like a union.
Yeah.
And we set the standard in the bar, like, no, you're not going to get a full stack marketer for less than, you know, $50 an hour. I mean, a full stack, like a fractional marketer is going to be project rate. So it's kind of weird to talk hour. But, you know, if we set that standard, like, yeah, you can get a task doer at this level. Right. But like this level that you want, that you all are bitching and complaining that you don't have in your business, it's a different level for a reason.
Yeah. It reminds me of like, you can go get a massage where someone just pets you and it kind of feels nice for an hour and there's no benefit to it later. You can go get real body work and you pay $140 for the hour and it lasts you multiple weeks to a month to even longer. And like, I think we need to kind of force ourselves to go for quality because there's so much like in our culture that doesn't promote it. I just don't want to be a part of, and I don't want us to continue to make the online space this like race to the bottom. It doesn't serve anything. It doesn't help anybody.
Okay. First of all, I keep thinking about that massage I got with Twyla in Georgia that was so bad. It was like, you know,
I hate a fluffy massage.
I go for the deep body work. One time my uncle paid for me, gifted me a fascia. What's it called when it's the fascia?
Like rolfing.
Yeah. And she was 200 an hour. And she's like, I don't ever come up to Arlington. I happen to be in BC. She's like, I never come to Arlington, but I do it for Peggy. This is getting into a long-winded story, but my uncle's neighbor was elderly. And so my uncle was like, okay, she's up here. We got her in town. Like, let's get you here. Cause she never does that. And I think about that masseuse who knew her rates. She knew her boundaries. She knew the worth of her work and how good she was. And she was in such an interesting niche that it was hard to find anyone like her. And it was so easy for her to compete against Twyla. If I lived in DC, I would probably be trying to see her once a quarter because I know how good she is. And it was lasting and it was what I actually needed.
I think that we could hear that $200 an hour and be like, oh, she's charging too much. But guess how many of those she can do a day? I'm guessing it was a pretty physical session, right? So maybe she can only do 3 or 4 of those a day, maybe 4 days a week, right? Yeah. So there's this cap that's immediately put on her income.
Yeah.
But she gets to work in her genius with people who appreciate her. It's not greedy to be really good at what you do and charge for it. I want to pay for that stuff. More than like anything, nothing feels worse to me than buying something that I thought was going to be really good and dialed in and specific and exactly what I need and having it fall short. Nothing feels more wasteful to me. I feel like this is gross. I would have rather paid double and gotten what I thought I was going to get.
Well, and that really ties into the fear that business owners have about hiring in general. Like they are so afraid they are going to waste their time and their money because hiring is expensive. Mm-hmm. And we don't want that buyer's remorse. I just recorded a podcast and I mentioned this on my show earlier too, that those first 30 days are your opportunity to really demonstrate that with the client. And I think this is like the difference between someone who has experience and knows what they're doing versus somebody new, to wow them and take the lead and show them your unicorn power, right?
Yeah.
And impress them right away. And I see when I talk to our friends, I hear a lack of that happening. Mm-hmm. You know, like they're expecting ownership. They're expecting something out of the gate and they're ready to pass it on. Say like, help me with this problem. And then nothing magical happens right away. And then they start spiraling and then they start looking for excuses to fire or, why I shouldn't be paying this person. And it becomes like, I'm sure there's a law in there, but you start to see the bad thing and then you can't unsee it. Like one little mistake can just like put a crack in that early relationship. And I don't know where I'm going with this, but it's somehow tied to the service provider being able to charge that rate because they are good and they're demonstrating it.
I think it comes back to ownership. And I think in some ways you can ride yourself into someone's business with the energy of apology. I'm sorry, I charge so much. I'm sorry I've asked you to sign for a consistent retainer. I'm sorry about this. I'm sorry I can't do that. We cannot take the energy of apology. If you are a business owner, then you are in charge and you said the word lead. I think it's like actually really vulnerable to want to go in and like knock people's socks off. Cause like, what if it doesn't happen or it's not what they thought? But I think we kind of have to get there. Like, I want to come in so hot, I want to knock your socks off. I want you to not even understand what just happened and make you so thankful that you hired me. It's ridiculous.
I love that phrase. I wrote that down. I have never heard the energy of apology. So what is the opposite of energy of apology? Energy of knock your socks
off. Demanding.
Yeah. What is that?
I'm going to demand that you understand how great I am. And I think it's also that ownership. Like, this is my business. I know how to do this correctly. You actually don't. And I'm going to educate you on how to take advantage of what I have to offer. Here's what we're going to do. So I think about like, if you go and work inside of someone else's businesses, you take their hand and you make sure they make it to that successful place that they want to get because they hired you. If you wait for them to lead you, you will probably fail most of the time because they don't know what to do. Otherwise, they might not need you.
Yeah. That really ties down to also what a contractor does is show up to a business with skills. You are not an employee being told what to do and being required and micromanaged. Those that are all laws defined in the U.S. And so as a contractor, you're expected to waltz in, take their hand and lead the way.
It's a leadership role.
I wonder, and it's so hard when you're new and you don't know. Like, it really is. And I just think about the person starting to, and I mean, a lot of our listeners here are already freelancing. And I think there's safe places to begin when you're subcontracting or you are maybe in an agency, and that's another great place to start. And then eventually, if you decide that this is what you want, it can make sense to break out on your own for sure. It's definitely not for everybody. I will say that.
Right.
Some people do better as employees.
Yeah. And that's okay. Not everyone has to be a business owner. But if you are going to be one, show up for it.
And you know what's also interesting is I know I do a lot of my marketing and my messaging for contractors because that was me. I didn't want to go back to a 9-to-5. Once I started staying at home with my firstborn, I wanted flexible work. Do you know how many times our unicorns get asked to be employees or like leveled up to the next position, to the next position? Like, that's on the table. It's still on the table, whether full-time or part-time, to go all in with one client, which I think would be kind of a dream to get paid well and have benefits and not and be part-time and not have to do all of the marketing and contracts and invoices and everything. And like, that happens a lot.
I mean, you can think about a lot of it being an internship where you're using all this work to find your real gig. That's fine too.
Yeah. I also think about the buffet when you walk in and you're like, you're just like figuring out like what tastes good? What do I want more of and what works well for me?
Yeah. And it's okay to be a business owner for a while and realize it's not for you. Like, it truly isn't for everyone. And that's okay. Like, I think some people have shame about going, oh, I went and took a job. Like, no, hell, it's fantastic. If I could go and be employable, I would love to. I can't do it. I don't know how to be an employee. I suck at it.
How do you know? Like, what do you do? Let's talk about confidence for a second. Because if you've ever turned down a freelance marketing gig because you weren't sure if you could deliver, you are not alone. Whether you're a virtual assistant who's done a little bit of everything or a corporate marketer escapee who's great at strategy but lost in all the new platforms and new strategies like Kajabi or ConvertKit, I've got a resource that will change the game. The Unicorn Digital Marketing Assistant School Self-Starter Program is here to help you finally say yes to those high-value projects with the skills, the tech know-how, and the confidence to back it up and charge what the work is truly worth. It's practical hands-on training in the exact marketing tasks and online businesses you need to know. All things I did as well. So you can stop playing small and start owning your expertise. If you're ready to feel legit and get paid like a pro, go to udmaschool.com and enroll today.
Every job I've ever gotten, I ended up being in charge or had a beef with someone who was. Like, really, like, didn't work out for me. Because everywhere I go, I have ownership energy all the time. Ask my husband. It's rather annoying. But it's just how I came here.
I was thinking that at the beginning when you were telling your opening story about me, especially in my 20s, because I didn't know about entrepreneurship. And obviously, everything worked out. And I had some great stepping stones. But I had ownership energy as well and a beef with, I had to work in the military. I was in a public affairs office. And I'm like, wait, these idiots are my boss? And I needed leadership and mentorship. I was very green, but I'm not someone who walks around with a big head. But I'm like, I have to do what they say, and they don't get AP style, and they don't know how to write, and they don't know anything about layout and design and or press releases. And like, this is my boss? I'm like, what is happening here? Mm-hmm. I've had some situations where for a second there, I thought something was wrong with me. And I'm not like creating drama or anything, but just inside, I was like, wow, I'm always taking on more. You know, I'm always that girl who's doing more. I'm working so hard. And probably like that's like another conversation. But I'm just thinking about those little signs that maybe this is the right place for me. That it didn't work out. It didn't work out because I got fired. It didn't work out because I truly wasn't happy.
You need to be free. Nobody fences in a unicorn.
Yeah. No, she's beautiful on the hill with her sparkles. I had a friend of mine tell me he hates the word freelancer because we don't work for free. Mm-hmm. And I look at it like you do. I'm like, to me, it's freedom to call the shots and to have that ownership energy you're talking about, which I think is so beautiful.
But I do think language matters, and like it might help people who are struggling with ownership to check how you're talking about what you do. Like, I'm not working for so-and-so. They are your client.
Yes.
So I have a business and I have four businesses that are my clients. Like, and I run the show and I know what the, like, you're the expert. They're hiring you for your expertise, right? So you're the subject matter and service expert. But I think like making sure that the way you talk about it isn't employee language, that all the freedom is built in with like, well, that works with my company's schedule, right? That works with the way my company culture goes. Like, we don't actually work with companies who believe in this, that, or the other thing, right? We actually have these values over here, and that's how who we show up for to support as clients. Like, there's a bunch of different ways that you can really take ownership. And I think language is a big part of it.
Yeah, we talk about this in the work group. Sometimes when we get a new member, they're like, why am I applying for a job? And like, sometimes it's the easiest word to come out. But no, you are not applying because you are not an employee, and they are not hiring you because you are not an employee. So we try to ditch that language, but it just like creeps in. So we try to say things like booking, signing, contracting, putting our name in the hat. We'll say that. And then also it's working with clients.
Yep.
That's a decision you make too. Like, you're part of that, whether you want to be in a contracted relationship or not.
And do you want your brand associated with that kind of business?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is so interesting. So why do you specialize in the business owners who are newer? Because I find that very interesting in this space when I feel like a lot of people are going after the millionaires, just to be blunt.
Well, because if you look at the statistics, like, most businesses don't make $60,000 a year. And that I'm not looking at that from a like, well, there's more people in that bucket, so I better go fish over there. It's more like, there are so many people who are so close to getting to sustainability and they aren't there yet. And I'm actually really good at helping them. I can look at someone's business and look at their history and see like, what are the tweaks that you could make based on who you are and based on what has historically worked for you to continue to have success. And I'm also always hammering on the fact that like, $60,000 isn't sustainable unless you are partnered with someone who has health insurance and makes a decent wage, right? So if you have any interest in at all in having that sustainable practice, then I want to help people get there.
And that's where a lot of our freelancers are. And I was in that lucky situation for a while. I was married to
In that situation. It's fantastic.
But yeah. Yeah.
I still need to make more money than 60 grand a year.
Yeah. And you're talking about gross or net right there with 60.
The majority of small businesses make less than $60,000 a year in the United States. Majority.
Are you talking about take home like ownership pay or gross in their business?
Gross in their business.
Oh my gosh. So then they're taking home even less with all their expenses.
Right. And like the statistics for females who turn into millionaires, businesses that get to a million, it's less than 2%, I think. So, you know, that's like a whole bunch of business owners who are trying to get at, you know, 500 women. Or however many that is, right? It's probably thousands of them. But, you know, we can't all work. Like, I think it sounds nice to work with people who are making a lot of money so that it feels easier for us to sell.
Mm-hmm. And we can
charge more.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But it's not necessarily like the best way to go or where the most people are.
So what does your work or your tweaks look like with these type of clients? Because we're also working with those clients at that level too. You know, sometimes they're just hitting six figures and they're starting to bring on a virtual assistant or a marketing assistant.
Mm-hmm.
See as being some of the problem.
One problem I see is how people charge. Like if we look at coaches and everybody listening, like this is what we're talking about.
Right. It's very meta.
Right. I talked with a gal the other day and she was like, can I charge $4,000 for this? She's like super specialized expertise in her niche and offering this 3-month thing, which is genius. And I was like, well, let's do the math. If you can only serve 12 clients at a time, and let's say you charge $1,000 a month, that's $144,000 a year. Maybe you can pay yourself $60,000
yeah.
off of that, right? Once you pay taxes, pay for your expenses, maybe hire a coach, do all the things we like to do. We all like a lot of continuing education and communities we like to buy into. So I'm like, it's okay to not charge very much at the beginning and get your legs under you and figure out like, who are the people I'm really here to serve and I can have the most impact with. But you have to be upping your price every 3 to 7 clients as a coach. With you guys, I think it's probably every single client, because that's, if you're doing 10 hours a week, you don't have that much time to give away, right?
Yeah, that's kind of what I teach, is stair-stepping it. All right,
yeah.
If you establish this price, you sold it at this price, we can go up more. We can build off of that.
Every time. Yeah. And then establish regular rate increases. Like it could be a part of your initial client contract that you raise your rates every year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at like what, I mean, look at the price of eggs. My husband just paid $10 for an 18 pack of eggs.
And I can't.
If your prices haven't gone up in the last 3 months, you're losing money.
Yeah. With inflation right now. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Right. And yet, I mean, at the beginning when I was first freelancing and, you know, doing some marketing work, I didn't know what I was doing. I think I undercharged so crazy, and there wasn't a community to talk to. There wasn't any way to figure out what was normal. There wasn't mm-hmm. the content and the resources that we have now. But I remember coming back to my client and trying to raise it from $20 an hour. And keep in mind, I was doing marketing work, and just the pushback I got from her. And she was one of those clients that, I don't know how to say it anymore directly, but I needed to just leave, right? Like
right.
I was never going to convince her of the value, no matter how I explained it. But right. it was such a defining moment for me. And she did the first pay raise, but like eventually I was going to like cap out there. It was such a defining moment for me to say like, hey, this needs to be more and this isn't fair and you want more hours. And now, you know, it was like such a scary experience for me.
Right.
And she was such my bread and butter client. But then I found myself kind of talking myself out of it because I was getting such a good experience. And she was so mm-hmm. well connected. And I don't know if you see this, but
I do see this.
People at a higher level know, and she was at a higher level, know they could take advantage of people.
Yeah. And they say things like, it's such an opportunity for you to get to work with me, for you to
yes.
get to be around. And like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't approve of this messaging.
No, and it filled me with resentment, you know,
right.
It really did. And the interactions, and it took me way too long to eventually, I mean, I raised my prices a couple of times and eventually I walked away, but yeah.
Well, I think like the resentment is such a good key for people. Like that's when I talk to my clients about raising their prices, is when they're annoyed that people are coming in. Like you need to be excited to do what you're doing, right? You could go get a job, but if you're going to do this, like make sure you do it in a way you like it.
Yeah.
And your prices have a lot to do with that. So if you're an owner and you're feeling resentment towards your clients, that means you are doing something wrong. And it's on you to figure that out. It's not their job to be like, I think I should pay you more.
No. Nope. No
you're
one's
the leader. You raise your prices.
That has happened to me. Clients have, you know, wanted to keep me and feared that I would walk away. But like you said at the beginning of the show, no one's going to do it for you. This is, again, like the ownership of your own profitability. What else do early coaches struggle with?
I think there's all this hype around them making the 100K. I think that what people think $100,000 a year does is actually what $250,000 a year does. But when they are initially hitting it, they can kind of get in this like, oh, I'm making so much money. I'm going to go spend $25,000 on a mastermind. The overspending and oftentimes without well-developed, what's the right word, discernment on what is smart to spend my money on and not smart to spend my money on. So I really like to help people think through, like, why would we make an investment? What's the right fit for, like, what's happening here? What's happening next? Do you want to do that for entertainment? Do you want to do that to be a part of something? Is that, like, really going to move the needle? Teaching some profit first is another thing that I love.
Ooh, I love that too.
That's been a big part of, like, I was able to build a custom home in a big part because of my coaching practice and the profitability and running profit first and being smart with my money. And that meant I didn't do some of the $25,000 masterminds, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Well, right, and you're so good at connecting and figuring out how to make that work at your business and get the results without joining the 30K, because you're so good at connecting with people and forging those relationships that's all those masterminds really are anyway.
Right. Yeah. And I got tired of joining masterminds to try to meet people and having to deal with the guru being like, I'm not really interested in that part. I just want to connect with people.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That happened to me in one where I'm like, whoa, why is this the guru show? And no. And then I was kind of like looking around. I'm like, I actually just want to talk to these people.
Right. Yeah.
And then I was getting very cliche advice that was like, great job. I'm like, that's not why I'm here either. I want you to really like punch it in the face and make it better and just like wow me. And I remember that happening to me very early on. I shared a meme on, or a reel or something on Instagram a year ago. And it was where sometimes when we're in the business and we see our client like spending money on dumb shit, lack a better word. I shared that meme. I think it's Wolf of Wall Street. And it's like, and then they say they don't have money. They say they can't pay us. They give us all this money guilt. And then they go join the 10K business retreat in Egypt. And you're just like, oh my gosh, I had a lot of people react to that because like we see what our clients are spending and we know that. And I don't know, it's really easy to like absorb that stress and make it our own. And I wondered what you could tell a service provider in that moment where they're like, okay, my business, it's almost like a bad relationship. Telling one thing and doing another, right?
Right. I mean, I think about any sales call is like, we're never in someone else's wallet. We don't ever actually know. Like, you know, that's how many times I've done a sales call and someone been like, well, I've got to move some money around. And then I got a check from a literal trust fund. Like people have trust funds. People have private planes. People have access to all kinds of resources like that we don't know about. And it's none of our business. Mm-hmm. You have to do, and I think work really hard at staying out of your client's wallet consistently. It's your job to manage your business and your business's profits and understand like, I cannot work for less than whatever per hour, hopefully like $45. I have to work for that. If someone can pay it, they can pay it. And if they can't, that's okay. But like, I'm going to go be an expert with the people who really understand my unicorn greatness.
That's such a good advice because you never know. I had somebody tell me this too when I was launching, like, don't assume people can't pay your price. Because I was doing that with my audience. Oh, there are a lot of like stay-at-home moms who are like me that are a little cash strapped, but the reality is people will find a way. You don't know their situation and you have to price it for what it's worth and to attract some of the right people, right? While still being accessible. And I found myself like, wow, I'm bringing my money story and my whole idea on pricing. I wouldn't have paid this back in 2009 because I didn't even know this world existed. So of course I wouldn't have paid that. Mm-hmm. And it was so fascinating that I was bringing that into my pricing of my program.
Yeah. And I think pricing realistically, like if you're going to have a $50 an hour price tag, know why you do and know why really the value of your work is worth double, sometimes even triple, so that you can very clearly and honestly say, this is what I charge. It's not about what you're worth. I get real tired of people being like, charge what you're worth because like you're priceless. This is just time. It doesn't matter. Yeah. But you need to know, like, I charge this much because I can only work this many hours a week. This is what my business needs to do. And this is what I think is realistic for the market.
Yeah.
Like, I think there was a lot of like, especially in the coaching industry, a lot of like puffed up pricing for a long time. And it's come back a little bit in areas. But I think we got to be realistic. Like, you don't have to charge $10,000 so that you feel like you're worth it. You got to charge what makes sense.
I'm curious what your answer, and I don't know if we've talked about this, to the online business owners who outsource overseas. and $2-$4, sometimes $10 an hour, because that's where we're struggling is how do we communicate that value, compete against that? And
I don't think you can compete. Like, don't even try, because you can't really, right? Like, no. You can't compare a $45 thing and a $4 thing. If someone's in it to make the decision around money, they're always going to go for the cheaper thing. And unless they have some sort of come to Jesus moment where they really want to like spend their money in America or in North America, like they're always going to go that way.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think you have to that. Be right. They come back and they come back super happily and excited. Like, mm-hmm. I think that you just have to, in whatever way you can, make it irrelevant that option exists, like, because you work with people who wouldn't make that choice.
Oh, I love that. I love that so much. And there's always going to be a contingency of people who do it. And they're just not our people, right?
And, oh, that's not your client.
Yeah. Okay. I'm curious if you have any kind of final words about that could help empower my freelancers when they are thinking about their pricing, when they are stepping into this business owner mindset. What do we need to hear?
What I want you to remember is that you are not representing yourself in your own business and your own insecurities, but you are out here representing an entire industry. And what you do matters, because how you show up for one client informs them on how they're going to experience freelancers for the rest of time. So if everyone is able to charge more and not deal with bullshit and have great boundaries and be really honest about what it costs to do what you do and to have your expertise, you're going to bring the whole industry up. And that's a really good thing. So like when I think about me and the coaches I work with, we're all in this together. And you guys are all in this together. And what Emily does impacts each of you. So you better make sure she stays on her A game, right? And what you do impacts Emily's business.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like every time I get on a sales call and someone has been burned by another coach, that's my problem. I have to deal with that. I have to deal with the fact that it takes them longer to buy, that they may not even want to hire a business coach ever again because somebody else did that to them. But it's still my responsibility to show up for my industry in the way that I want to and to take the lead and to be a representative of this work in the way that I want to. And I think we all have to do that in our fields.
I just think you should take over this podcast. I mean, Karen, this is exactly what I've been trying to do here, is get everyone to rally around together and not see each other as competition, but to elevate this, because it's happening out there. You know, freelancers are ghosting. Every now and then I get a complaint in my inbox. I mean, I have had people trash talking unicorns in other Facebook groups. Not that many. Mm-hmm. I'm giving you like a few specific examples. And it's crazy how damaging that can be. I mean, human nature, if you have 10 compliments and one negative, everyone's going to look at the negative, right? Mm-hmm. And so I know that we have the power to go out there and represent and show our marketing chops. And that's what we're pushing in the work group. You know, that's what we're showing on the podcast, how to do better with your services and be more confident. But like, I hope everyone understands the collective requirement that this community mm-hmm. needs, and we don't have to put up with the bullshit.
Right. Yeah. I think that's fantastic.
I think Jefferson Fisher told everyone to stop cussing because it's unprofessional, but sometimes it's just what comes out.
I think you got to express yourself in your way.
And I've seen it all. I mean, I've worked in over 100 businesses. I'm usually working with good ones, but there's been some red clients from the beginning, you know, and I can put together the patterns, but it's hard not to just instantly judge. It's up to us to vet and do our best research on the client and all of that. But there's also so much power in the secret underground mm-hmm. sister network. And I think you know where I'm going with this. A lot of opportunities open up. This is how people get on podcasts and get on stages, the by name referrals. But it's mm-hmm. also happening. I don't know if anyone's talking about this. Don't go work for her. She's crazy. She does well. She's burned through 3 OBMs in 3 months. You know, mm-hmm. all of those, like, you can get the warnings if you're in the right circle and you're talking, and we could protect each other from those situations because it burns us too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we should all be sharing that kind of stuff. Like, I don't think it should be a secret that when people are doing inhumane things.
Yeah.
Because we don't want those people's businesses to keep generating revenue because they're going to keep harming people.
Yeah. Some of them are. And some clients I'm I'm glad I walked away from. Others, it was really hard to walk away, but I outgrew my time there and my services and my pricing, and I was able to help them find someone else who was a little bit newer, and that felt really good. So, oh my gosh, this is such a fun conversation. I always like talking to you. Tell everyone, you have an awesome freebie for us. What is your gift today?
It's 5 ways to make your coaching your marketing. And I think this could be interesting for you guys because you're constantly seeing behind the scenes. Like I think about my support person, Erin. She sees like so many of my coaching sessions, all the podcasts. She's like so in on what makes me who I am and how I work that like she really gets it. So you could help see ways to market your clients that they really aren't seeing. So it's really like, how do we take all that goodness from behind the scenes and put it out on the front stage so that your amazing clients that you work with can actually get more clients and pay you more?
Yes. And that would wow them in those first 30 days if you could help them.
Yeah. Come in with good ideas. There is nothing more exciting to me than when my support person's like, hey, I had this idea, or I'm going to go do this and show up and drop your name so that you get the connections. And I'm like, what? That's amazing. Like, it's the best.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I love that. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. We'll put that 5 ways in our show notes in the description below. And where's the best place to hang out with you, to connect with you?
I'm karengillen.com or karengillen anywhere because I have an interesting name.
Yeah.
Easy to find.
Yeah. And you also have a podcast, right?
I have a podcast. Yeah. It's called Coach Business. Like today, in a couple of minutes, I'm interviewing a cookbook author and asking like about how they think about business. So it's always about like, we're either coaching or we're talking about business and how different people do business in different ways, because I think it's always really inspiring to look outside of our industries to see what might be our next big thing.
Yeah, I read that comment you made and I thought that's so interesting because to me, that's the definition of the unicorn, to be a little bit different, a little bit more desired and hunted when you stand out. And I'm curious, I actually can't wait to listen to that episode to see what she's doing differently.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Thank you so much. We'll see you over on Instagram.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to The Marketing Freelancer. If you're ready to connect with other marketing freelancers, learn advanced strategies, and take your business to the next level, check out our Digital Marketers Workgroup. It's my exclusive membership where you'll find the support, community, and tools to land premium clients and grow your income. Visit marketersworkgroup.com to learn more, or just use the link in the show notes. Apply today. Step into your power, own your expertise, and command the rates your work deserves. See you next time on The Marketing Freelancer. Unicorns unite. Sorry, I had to like restart my Zoom room. So right when you popped in, I like closed my Zoom. Okay. It's like my second microphone. I think my brother sent it to me. He's like, you sound terrible.
I had one that looked like that and I never liked it. And then it kind of, I think it stopped working. But this one I really like.